Good morning. Today's daf is Chavav and Sukkah. We are starting on Chavim and Beis. We are just four lines from the bottom. There are two lines I should have read yesterday at the end of yesterday's daf. Okay. My head must have been already running. Anyway, okay. I'm Rabbi Zeira. Our last discussion that we had yesterday, we are picking it up four lines from the bottom, is revolving around a chasen and Sheva Brachos in the Sukkah. So the Gemara goes back and forth in terms of Sheva Brachos are not going to be in the Sukkah. And the Gemara is really struggling to find out why. Why are we not having Sheva Brachos in the Sukkah? When the Chos and Kala get married, so right before Sukkah. So you're not allowed to get married in Sukkah. You're not allowed to get married in Chol HaMoed as well. It's a Mishnah in Moed Katan. We're going to see that Mishnah soon enough in the Daf. But it must have been that the Chasna occurred before the Yantiv. And yet Sheva Brachos on Yantiv, on Sukkah. So now a discussion in the Gemara as to whether or not the Sheva Brachos is going to be in the Sukkah. And the Gemara says it's not going to be in the Sukkah. Why? Because the Sukkah, well, the Gemara gives two reasons yesterday. Abai and Rava give two different reasons. Abai says that there's a concern of Yichud. There are so few people in the Sukkah that if the Chasen steps out of the Sukkah for a moment, so his newlywed is going to be alone with another man. That's Abai's explanation. Rava says it's just simply not private enough an area, right? The Sukkah is open entirely on its fourth side. Probably some of his third side is open as well. It's just not a private area. And he would like a more private environment for him and his new wife. So those are the two options that are given, and the Gemara struggled a little bit in terms of explaining why you just simply can't do the Sheva Brachos in the Sukkah itself. Anyway, I'm Rabbi Zera, just to close on the discussion. So on Achli B'Sukkah V'Chadi B'Chupa V'Koshekein D'Chadi Libai D'Kav Dina Tarte. So Rabbi Zera says, look, here's what I did. It's very simple. I ate in the Sukkah as per the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah, and I was Chadi B'Chupa, and then we had the simcha in the chuppah. Chuppah again, as we discussed yesterday, that's the new house that is occupied by chasen and kala, either during Sheva Brachos or just for the beginning of the marriage, whatever the case may be. And so I did both, basically. And chadi libai dekav din atarte. My heart was filled with joy that I was able to do both. I fulfilled the mitzvah of yeshiva besukkah. I fulfilled the mitzvah of being mesamech together with my new kala. Good. So the Rabbi Zera says that I didn't struggle with this option. I just simply did both. Okay, Tana Rabbana. We are in the very bottom of Chafei Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. Continuing now in the Braisa, Chasam v'hashosh binin, v'chol b'nei chupa p'tur min atzvilim v'chayim v'kriyishma. So you have a chasam, you have the shosh binim, and the entire b'nei chupa, right, everybody invited. So they're going to be exempt from the mitzvah of tefillah, and they're going to be exempt from tefillin as well. However, they're going to be chayim v'kriyishma. So what's the distinction that we're making over here between tefillah, tefillin, and versus Kriyat Shema? So if you look at Rashi over here, I'm going to cover just a couple of very short Rashis. Rashi writes Peturim in a tefillah, Dabai Kavana. So first of all, when it comes to Shemoneh Esrei, you need Kavana. So you're at a chasna, it's your chasna, or you're invited to the chasna, which means that you have a mitzvah to be mesamech, chasna mekala. So it's going to be very hard for you to concentrate and focus. Okay, nowadays our Kavana is such that you go to any chasna nowadays, and there's going to be mincha, and there's going to be ma'ariv, and, you know, it's okay. But again, we're learning just one brisa. In other words, obviously, this is not going to represent the p'sak halacha. But anyway, so that is so that's why they're going to be put from tefillah. What about tefillin? So so Rashi says over here, mishum shchicha, mishum deshchicha, shechros v'kalas rosh, because there's drinking at a chasna, as a result of drinking the chasna. So you're not going to be in the proper state of mind in order to be wearing your tefillin. Okay, reminder, we all know this, but back in the day, they used to wear the tefillin all day. Right, from the time they woke up in the morning, they put on their tefillin, and that's it. They kept it on the whole day. And obviously, our minhag is not to. Our minhag is only to keep it on during shacharis. But they kept it on the whole day. So when they went to a chasna, so this particular brisa advises, you got to take off your tefillin. It's just simply not going to be appropriate. You're going to be under the influence, and it's just simply you're not going to be in the proper state of mind in terms of wearing tefillin. According to the Braisa, you're chayv in Kriyat Shema. Take a look at the last Rashi over here. He writes, the mitzvah is kavanasa einu ala pasuk rishon, v'chom liyashiv da'atan shakatan k'dei likra pasuk rishon. So when it comes to Kriyat Shema, so how much kavana do you need for Kriyat Shema? So the best, of course, is to have kavana for the totality of Kriyat Shema from the very beginning to the very end. However, in terms of the base minimum amount of kavana necessary for Kriyat Shema, it's only for the first pasuk. So for the first pasuk, so you can muster the proper kavana necessary for that first pasuk. That's within the realm of possibility. Okay, that is all per the First part of the braisa says, we now turn to Chavav Amad Aleph. Well, hold on. We're gonna make larger comments on the braisa in just a moment. And Mishum Rebbe Sheila, as we are now on the top of Chavav Amad Aleph, continuation of the braisa, said over in the name Rebbe Sheila, Amr Chassan Potter. Even as it relates to Kriyashma, the Chassan's gonna be Potter from Kriyashma. Meaning there's no way he can put together enough kavan even for that one pasuk, so he's going to be butter from that. Now, as far as the shoshbinim are concerned, on the entire b'nei chuppah, so they're going to be chayav in kriyashma, the first pasuk of kriyashma. Okay. Now, as far as this b'ris is concerned, so the b'ris over here is now pointing out that when you go to the chasna, so for the most part, so it sounds like you are chayav in all the mitzvos. However, when it comes to tefillah, that requires extra kavan, you can't have it. When it comes to tefillin, everyone's going to be under the influence, and therefore you can't wear tefillin. But it certainly sounds like over here that as far as all the other mitzvahs of the Torah are concerned, so they're going to be obligated. Rashi writes on the very top of Chavav Amad Aleph, Mikriya Shema Detarit, Vishar B'nei Chuppah Chayavin, V'leis Lulahani Tanaya, Osek B'mitzvah Patam in a Mitzvah. So Rashi over here makes a really interesting comment, and that is that this braisa that we just learned does not subscribe to the principle of Osek B'mitzvah Patam in a Mitzvah. So you'll recall yesterday's daf, so we dealt with primarily the inyan of Osek B'mitzvah Patam in a Mitzvah. When you're involved in one mitzvah, you're going to be exempt from other mitzvahs. So we talked about that yesterday, how do we know that? What are the makaros? We came up with two makaros yesterday in the Gemara in terms of how we know this idea. So Rashi says that the author of this particular braisa that we just started off our daf with this morning does not subscribe to that viewpoint. How do we know that, says Rashi? Because look, the braisa over here is picking out. Well, for the mitzvah of tefillin, so because they don't have because they're going to be under the influence, so for that they're going to be putter. Well, what do you mean? Just tell me that they're involved in the mitzvah of being Mesameh, Chas Mekal, and that should be it. So Rashi therefore arrives at the conclusion that whoever the author of this braisa is, Bein Latana Kama, Bein LaRabbi Shila, they don't subscribe to the principle of Osek B'mitzvah, Patar Min HaMitzvah. Now you can imagine that that's a little bit strange, meaning in yesterday's daf, there was no counter-argument. In other words, the Gemara never said, oh, I disagree with the whole principle of Osek B'mitzvah, Patar Min HaMitzvah. We never heard that there was another position to the matter. It sounded like this was a principled position. It's a tenet that just simply exists within the realm of halacha. The framework of halacha is that if you're involved in one mitzvah, you're exempt from other mitzvahs. So it doesn't sound like anyone's arguing in that. And for Rashi to say that the author of this braisa does not hold of osik b'mitzvah, patam in a mitzvah, so that's an striking comment by Rashi. You can see the top tosas, we're not going to go through it right now. The top tosas takes issue with Rashi and his understanding of the braisa. Anyway, it's a really interesting Rashi that definitely demands a lot more attention. Correct. The Shulchan Aruch nowadays says that our chassan is going to be saying Kriya Shema. We don't have enough kavana to really demand that we're going to be exempt. Okay, right. The Shulchan Aruch. That's the Shulchan Aruch, and unfortunately, we're in that position of kavana nowadays. Tanya, we learned in a brisa, three lines down, a Chavav and Aleph. Amar Rabbi Chananya ben Akavi Kosrei Sfarim Tefillin Umezuzos Hein V'Tigrein V'Tigrei Tigrein V'Chola Oskin B'Malach Shemaim Lasuye Mochrei Tchelos Peter Mikriya Shemaim Minatfilin Minatfila U'Minatfilin U'Mikol Mitzvos Amors B'Tarul Lekaim Div Rabbi Yosi Aglili Shaya Rabbi Yosi Aglili Omer Osik B'Mitzvah Patam Min HaMitzvos. So Rabbi Chananya ben Akavi is quoted as saying that if you are writing a sefer or tefillin or a mezuzah, or if you happen to be involved in the sale of these items, including even the sale of tchelas. So under any and all these circumstances where you're osik b'mitzvah, so you're going to be putter from the other mitzvahs. Okay. Meaning clearly over here, this braisa is clearly of the position that not only do we subscribe to the principle of osik b'mitzvah, putter min HaMitzvah, but it extends to when you are involved in a mitzvah, or even if you are within the sale of a mitzvah. That also selling a mitzvah is considered being osek b'mitzvah, right? You could have made an argument. You could have said, look, if I'm selling the dvar mitzvah, so that's called making a living. That's called parnasa. And by the way, parnasa also critical and important. But the chiddush over here of this braisa is that when you're selling a dvar mitzvah, that's being called osek b'mitzvah. And therefore, you're going to be putter min HaMitzvos. Tanu Rabbanan, we continue with the braisa. Now, we touched on this braisa yesterday, through the lens of Tosfos. This brisa became really important for Tosfos yesterday in terms of giving us a parameter of how to understand Osek b'mitzvah, patar min ha-mitzvah. We'll go through the brisa, and I'll remind you what we said yesterday in Tosfos. Tana Rabbanan hochei drachim b'yom, patar min ha-sukkah, b'yom, v'chayav b'layla. So let's say you're traveling during the day. Now Rashi over here writes, you're traveling over here in the first part of the brisa, it's not l'dvar mitzvah. Now we know it's not l'dvar mitzvah because in a moment the end of the brisa is going to be talking about traveling l'dvar mitzvah. So clearly the first part of the brisa is not talking about traveling l'dvar mitzvah. So why are you traveling here in the first part of the brisa? So Rashi writes, you're traveling because of schalra. You're doing business. Okay, now it is a little bit strange, by the way. When are you doing business? So obviously we're talking about in sukkahs because we're going to be talking about the p'tur of the mitzvah of sukkah. So obviously you're not traveling on Yontif. That's out of the question. So it's Chol HaMoed. Okay. We're going to be spending a Masechta talking about working during Chol HaMoed. Not the entire Masechta, but when we get to Moed Katan, so the first and second Parakim of the Masechta, only three in total. So it's going to be talking about those types of activities, Malachas, that you're allowed to do. Okay, so it must be that our discussion over here, as Rashi understands it, is limited to the kind of business that you're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. Regardless, the point over here of the Raisa is that you're traveling. It's not L'dvar Mitzvah, but you're Hochei Drachim Bayom. So there, while you're traveling during the day, you're Pater from a Sukkah, but only during the day. At night, when you're not traveling, you're Chayav in the Mitzvah of Sukkah. Now, Hochei Drachim Balayla Pater Min HaSukkah Balayla V'Chayav in Bayom. If you're traveling at night, again, traveling over here, traveling on business, so then, and you're traveling at night, so then you're going to be exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah at night. But you're going to be obligated during the day. Hochei drachim b'yom uva laila. If you're traveling day and night, patur min ha-sukkah, b'yom 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 b'layla. So then you're going to be exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah both day and night. Okay, basically, the first part of the brisa over here is just establishing that when you're traveling on sukkahs, but it's not l'dvar mitzvah. It's l'dvar rishus. It's for something which is volitional. You're doing business. So then you're going to be exempt, but only while you're traveling. Now, why are you going to be exempt while you're traveling? So this is not falling under the category of Osek b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. Because in a moment, that's going to be the next part of the brisa. The next part of the brisa is going to contrast and teach us that very point. So why are you patur min ha-sukkah? So take a look at Tosos over here. The Tosos over here, well, we don't have to, well, let's start with Rashi. Hochei drachim b'yom patur min ha-sukkah b'yom. So we know that the pasuk says that we have to sit in the sukkah, we have to dwell in the sukkah, and ke'en yeshiva beisa. And that means to say that basically our sukkah for the week of sukkahs is now going to become our house. And k'shem shekol hashana einu nimna malachas b'derech b'schora, kach kol yimos achad, she'enu yom tov, lo hutzrucha kasuv limnoa. Now, during the rest of the year, if you want to leave your house and you want to travel, so obviously you have the right to do so. Once your sukkah now becomes home base for the week of sukkahs, so now, just like in a home, I want to travel. So on sukkahs, I want to travel. So you're allowed to travel. And either traveling is going to move me away from my sukkah. Okay, that's fine. So the way Rashi understands it is that it really is a function of the fact that because now my sukkah becomes my home for the week, so just like during the rest of the year, I'm allowed to travel. So to on sukkahs, I'm allowed to travel. And while traveling, obviously, I'm going to be exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Obviously, as we stop, again, this is not a mitzvah, so as we stop, so we are going to be obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. That's the way Rashi understands it. Tosfos gives a very similar understanding. You could highlight subtle, nuanced differences between Rashi and Tosfos. But if you look at the third Tosfos over here, Ochad Racham Ayom, Kol Zeh Nafka Miteshu Ke'en Taduru. It's similar to Rashi. You're not confined to your home, and if during the week of Sukkot you're limited to just stay within the confines of your sukkah. So that you can't call that a house. A house, by definition, means it's your home base. Yeah. But you can travel at that point in time. Okay.
If you stop for lunch.
Right.
Yeah, you're not traveling.
All right, correct.
So then you should be in the sukkah.
Then. Again, if while you are traveling, right, so you have to stop over. So the way we're presenting the brisa, no. In other words, at that point in time, you are en route, and therefore you're going to be potter. When you stop at night, and now you're going to be really like you're staying one space during the night, so then you're expected to build the sukkah. Again, this is all advar rishos. Now we move to the second half of the brayso. Hochid racham b'yom uvalayla. Sorry. Hochin ledvar mitzvah. Thank you. So peturim beim bayom beim alayla. So once you're traveling ledvar mitzvah, so now you have a petur. And this petur is going to cover you not only when you're traveling, but even when you're not traveling. Meaning once you are hoche ledvar mitzvah, so now you fall under the category of osik b'mitzvah. Once you're osik b'mitzvah, you're patur min ha-mitzvah. Now let's recall, before we do a recall of yesterday's Tosfos, so Rashi over here says why? Why are you patur at night? Because now that you're in the category of osik b'mitzvah, so what did we learn yesterday? So Rashi reminds us what we learned yesterday. Not only do you have the petur when you're osik b'mitzvah, but even when you're tarud b'mitzvah. Remember, Rashi's understanding of yesterday's Gemara is that there really are two categories and there are two exemptions. Exemption number one is when you're actually involved in the mitzvah. Exemption number two is when you're preoccupied in thought, meaning the anxiety and the stress of the mitzvah is right now taking all of your attention. So during the day while you're traveling, you're called an osik b'mitzvah. At night, says Rashi, you are now a tarud b'mitzvah. You are now so preoccupied and the stress of the mitzvah is so weighing upon you that even at night you're going to be exempt. That's Rashi's understanding. Now let's go back to what we saw yesterday in Tosos. Tosos says, what do we see from this Gemara? We see from this Gemara that the patur of osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah, will follow you not only during the day, but at night as well. Meaning that even when you are not actively involved in the mitzvah, but you are resting, you're still going to be patur. Tosfos yesterday had a discussion, what if I could do both? What if it's efshur l'kayim shneihem? If I could do both the mitzvah the mitzvah that I'm currently doing and the other mitzvah as well. Right? Tosfos said yesterday, you're wearing tefillin. Are you patur from all the other mitzvahs? I'm wearing tzitzis right now. Am I patur from all the other mitzvahs because I'm wearing tzitzis? Tosfos says it can't be. So Tosfos yesterday said that if it's efshur l'kayim shneihem, if I could do both, so then one is not going to one is not going to exempt the other. The exemption only comes about in a scenario where by doing one, I'm going to be hamstrung to do the other. Okay, that's Tosfos yesterday. Alright, so what are we going to say regarding the patur at night? So it's interesting because Tosfos yesterday doesn't say the way Rashi saying it in today's daf. Rashi in today's daf says that at night you're tarud b'mitzvah, right? It is a phenomenal solution in terms of explaining how the patur extends both during the day and the night. During the day you're osik, and at night you're tarud. That was Rashi yesterday. So that was Rashi of today. Tosfos of yesterday says that ela vaday lo mifter. I'm just rereading from Tosfos yesterday. Ela vaday lo mifter ela b'shashu osik ba kagon tal shel aveda. The v'shochel etzorcha o behema shenosin la mizonos lo shchicha shabosu shal yavo ani l'shomimen v'tzarech lomer dahacha naimi ire. You have to say, says Tosfos, that somehow, if by forcing you to put up your sukkah at night, it's going to limit your travel ability. Okay, not exactly sure what that means, but you're going to have to say it, says Tosfos, because I subscribe to the idea that if I can do both, then I need to do both, and so somehow putting up a sukkah at night is going to hamstring your ability to travel and to get to your destination.
It's a big tikva.
Correct. Okay.
Well, you know, people often travel to go see family in Kalamoy.
Yeah, correct.
And we would be...
You'd be hamstring.
Correct.
But that's the first category of the brisa. The first category of the brisa is that if you're hochel and dvar rishus, so then while you're actually traveling, you're pater, but then when you stop, you're going to be chayiv. Okay. Ki hadar of chisav v'rabba beravuna. The Gemara now gives us a case study of two Amoraim who were osik b'mitzvah. Now this goes back to our Rashi in the Mishnah. So you recall when we first opened up the topic in yesterday's daf, we said that if you're hochel and ledvar mitzvah, one of the examples of Rashi is that you were makbel p'nei rabo. So I'm going to guess, maybe even correctly, but I certainly don't know this, that why did Rashi give that example? You remember yesterday's daf, Rashi gave three examples. One is to learn Torah, the other one is to be makbel p'nei rabo, and the third example of Rashi is pidyon shvuyim. Okay, so why Rashi chose that particular three selected examples of mitzvos, not clear, but in terms of selection number two, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but in terms of selection number two, the second example, probably he got it from this Gemara over here. This Gemara is giving the example of two Amoraim who are going to go visit the Rebbe during Chol HaMoed. So, ki hadar of chisav v'rabba baravuna, ki havo aile b'shabasa d'regla. So it happens to have been Shabbos Chol HaMoed, and they went lebe resh galusa, not on Shabbos itself, obviously, but before Shabbos, and Havagana Rakta de Surah. And what they did is that they stopped at the bank of the river Surah. Amran Ashluchim Mitzvah no Paturim. And they didn't sit in the sukkah. And they didn't sleep in the sukkah. And why not? Because they were shleich mitzvah. They were involved in the mitzvah of going and visiting the Rebbe on Yontiv. What kind of mitzvah of that? We also touched on that yesterday, but we didn't really explore that deeply. But anyway, let's put it in a category of mitzvah. And the point is that once they are now osik b'mitzvah, they're going to be pater. Not only during the day, but even at night as well, even as they stop to the side. Again, for Rashi of today, the reason why is because at night you're tarred b'mitzvah, and therefore going to be exempt. Tosus of yesterday says that somehow setting up the sukkah is going to inhibit their ability to travel.
If there was a sukkah available, I'm sure they would have slept.
It sounds that way. It's not totally clear, what extent they would have had to. Does this exemption give them? Okay. Tanur Rabbanan. Shomer ha'ir b'yom p'tur min ha'sukkah b'yom v'chayavim b'layla. If you're shomer ha'ir, your guard of the city. So if you're actually guarding, so you're going to be exempt from the sukkah during the day. But however, right now you're going to be obligated. So the Shomer Ha'ir over here, the Gemara is not putting it under the category of a mitzvah. Yes, security and protection is really important. And you could certainly give it some sort of label of a mitzvah, but it's not a formal mitzvah per se. And so therefore, the exemption is only while you're actually guarding. However, at night, when you're no longer guarding, so you're going to be chayav in the mitzvah of sukkah. Shomer Ha'ir b'layla, p'turim min ha'sukkah b'layla, v'chayav in b'yom. If you're guarding during the night, you're exempt while you're guarding at night. But during the day, you're going to be chayav in the mitzvah sukkah. Shomer Ha'ir b'yom b'malayla, p'tur min ha'sukkah b'yom b'malayla. Now, if you're guarding both day and night, so then you're going to be patur both day and night. Shomer Ganos u'pardesim. Now, if you're guarding a garden or a orchard, so p'tur b'yom b'malayla. So you are going to be exempt both during the day and during the night as well. The Gemara says, really, that last one I don't understand. V'le'avdei sukkah hasam v'le'isvil. So I don't understand. In other words, you're basically sitting in one place and you're guarding. So I got this great idea. So I understand if you have to walk around the city while guarding, so then I get it. In other words, you're not stationary, you're not in one place, you're totally mobile all the time while you're guarding, so fine, there's an exemption. But if you're guarding a garden and you're fixated, you're literally fixed in one location, so just set up a sukkah where you are and that should be it. So, Abai Amar Teshu Kein Tadura. So, the Gemara gives two explanations of why our guarding of the garden, right? Our guardian of the garden. Okay. I hope you enjoy the alliteration. So they say Teshu Kein Tadura. So, Abai's explanation is that the Petor is going to be grounded in the idea is that the Sukkah demands, the second time that we're referencing this point today, the Sukkah demands that you basically are living like you do in your house. And over here, if in fact you are expected to set up a sukkah at the garden, so that is not considered like a normal house. Why is that not considered like a normal house? There's a really interesting Rashi over here. Let's see the Rashi inside. Kein tadur kederech shehu dar kol hashana bebeiso. He's ki kaso hatara lahaniach diraso v'ladur kam besukkah. Im mitosav, v'kli tashmisho. Umatza osav. So what does the Torah expect? Torah expects that basically you're going to be leaving your house. But if you're going to go into the sukkah, your sukkah now is going to become your house. It is now your temporary residence for those 7 days of sukkahs. But basically it means is that the couch, the sofa, bring it outside. The bed, bring it outside. Okay, granted, and certainly in Chutz La'aretz, so we don't go to this degree. In Eretz Yisrael, more popular, much more popular. People would bring everything out into the sukkah. In my years in Eretz Yisrael, people would have a sukkah for eating, they would have a sukkah for sleeping. It was just, it's much more, Right? They do the mitzvah of yeshiva besukkah. All right, I'm just saying this as a generality. They do it better. So, but anyway, so the you bring everything out to the sukkah. Vizeh, and Rashi continues. Now, as far as our guardian of the garden is concerned, ein yochol la'avia sham ibnei ha-torach. In other words, it's just too much of a tircha. Not really sure why, but maybe the garden is not anywhere within the vicinity of his house. Whatever the case is, it's too much of a tircha to bring everything out there. And if all you got is just a hut, nah, that's not a sukkah. A sukkah, by definition, is going to be something that has amenities. This does not have the amenities, and so therefore you can't really call this a sukkah. That explains Abaye, is why such an individual is going to be patur min a sukkah. Really interesting. Rava Amar, back to the Gemara, Rava says, no, pirtza kor laganav. Well, wait 1 second. You're guarding the garden. And now, you are going to be in a hut. So the Gemara here, it's an expression. Pirtza kor laganav. If you have a breach, if you have an opening, it calls out to the ganav. Right? Rashi says it's a mashal. Basically, if the area looks unprotected, it's an invitation for thieves to come. You're guarding the garden and you're sitting in a sukkah. So right now your view is obstructed. At least three sides of your view is obstructed. You're basically, it's an invitation. You're sending an invitation out to all the thieves of the community. Hey, I'm guarding the garden, but I really can't see what's going on over here. Okay. And obviously you're going to fail as a guard. So might be now we could be now to come and out there, call you the pere. So the Gemara says now. There are two reasons why we gave an exemption for the guard of the garden, where he's going to be exempt. It says it's a function of Teshu Kain Taduru. Rava says it's because once you're sitting in the sukkah, you're basically inviting thieves to come. Nafkamina would be the following. Let's say that you're guarding, but all you're guarding is just simply a pile of fruit located directly in front of you. If the issue is Teshu Kain Taduru, you're going to be exempt, like we explained earlier. But if the issue is that you are not going to do a proper job guarding. Here you can do a proper job guarding. What you'll do is that you'll make your sukkah in a manner where the open side of the sukkah will be facing that which you have to be guarding. Okay, so that would be a nafkamina, says the Gemara, between the two reasons that are given. Okay, first sukkah of the Gemara now is in the books. So we have now touched on basically more discussion of osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. If you are osik not b'mitzvah, but osik b'rishus, so you do afford an exemption, you do gain an exemption, but what exemption is that? That's only while you're actually traveling. Once you stop, so then you're chayv in the mitzvah of sukkah. If you're osik b'mitzvah, so then now your exemption is going to be a lengthier exemption, where not only you're going to be exempt while you're actually traveling, but even at night as well. Now, why should that be? So as I went over a couple of times so far this morning, so I pointed to Rashi of today's daf, that you're tarud b'mitzvah, and Tosus of yesterday's daf, that somehow it's going to hamstring your ability. Okay, good. We are continuing now in the Gemara. We are halfway down on Chavav Amid Aleph. Next sugya of today. Cholin umisham shehem. You're sick and the attendance of the sick person. Tanur Rabban in the Gemara quotes the Brisa, Chola sha'amru lo, chola sheish bo sakana, la afilu chola sheim bo sakana, afilu chash be'inav, afilu chash berosho. So, who is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah? When we say chola, so we know that in halacha, there are different categories of chola. We speak about this all the time. Chola she'esh bo sakana, that's somebody who's in critical condition. Chola she'ein bo sakana, not critical condition, but bedridden. A mitzara ba'alma, somebody who just simply has a headache and is in discomfort. So what the Gemara says that our patur for the sukkah is going to be and any and all of the above. Obviously, if you're in critical condition, you're patur from the sukkah. But even if you're in non-critical condition, but you're bedridden, you got the flu, you're patur from the sukkah. Even if you have a really bad headache and being at the sukkah is going to make you so uncomfortable, so then you're going to be patur from the sukkah. This is what we call being mitzta'er. Now, from Tosus that I cited above, the third Tosus down, the mitzta'er is patur from the sukkah. Why? So Tosus says, because it's a function of teshu kein taduru, meaning that the Torah's expectation is that when you're sitting in the sukkah, you're dwelling like that as you would in your normal residence. So if you are uncomfortable in the sukkah, that's simply not going to be a function of teshvu kein taduru. The continuing now back in the Gemara, Amar Shimon Gamliel pamachas kashi beinai bekesari. One time my eye was hurting me in Kesari. V'hita Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Lishen ani umisham shay chutz sukkah. And an exemption was given to us by none other than Rabbi Yosi. In the Gemara, he's called Rabbi Yosi b'Ribi. Rashi says over here, this is Rabbi Yossi. Where's the Rashi? Yeah, Rashi says it's Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta. Okay, what we normally describe throughout the Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi. So he gave me an exemption, not only me but also my attendants as well, that we could be outside of the sukkah. Meaning, even though we're only in a state of discomfort, right? Chash be'inav, right? Your eyes hurting you. So, Tosha says not. We're not talking about somebody who's like there's real pressure in the eye and such an individual is in real critical condition. In other words, he just simply has a headache, or in this case, an eye ache. But nevertheless, since he's in the category of mistar, so he's patur min asukah. Back to the Gemara, Rav Shara la Rav Acha Bardala Lemigna Bekilta Basukah Mishumbake. So more allowances, more exemptions that are given because of mitzayir. So Rav allowed Rav Acha Bardala to sleep in a kilta. So kilta, you remember we discussed this earlier in the Masechta. So basically, it's a canopy, and the being in the canopy is going to share being in the sukkah. Meaning, by virtue of the fact that you're in a canopy, and the canopy itself is its own independent ohel, so therefore, by you being in the canopy, even though you're in the sukkah, but it's viewed as if you're not in the sukkah. And yet, over here, because there were so many bugs out there, the word baki over here is a reference to bugs. There were mosquitoes and gnats, and there were so many things over there, so an exemption was given in that you can basically sleep in the canopy. That is going to take away your mitzvah of sukkah. Yeah, but if you don't sleep in the canopy, you would be so uncomfortable. So you're under the category of mitzvah, and mitzvah is pater from the sukkah. Rav Asharu lula Rav Acha bar Ada lemigne bar mimental asim mishum sircha digir gashisa. Okay, I did a terrible job pronouncing that. Anyway, Rava gave an allowance for Rabbi Acha bar Ada to sleep outside of the sukkah. There were some bricks that were used as flooring for the sukkah, and once it got wet, it really smelled. It smelled terrible. And so an allowance was given for him to be outside the sukkah, meaning if you're going to be uncomfortable within the sukkah, so you fall into the category of mitzayir, and so therefore an allowance was given to him to be outside the sukkah. Rava Latame, Dama Rava, mitzayir patam in a sukkah. Okay, and this is Rava. Rava says that a mitzayir is going to be exempt from the mitzvah sukkah. V'hanan tanan chol and misham shamein patur min a sukkah. So the Gemara says, yeah, from the Mishnah, doesn't it sound like that's not correct? Because our Mishnah is talking about who's exempt. Our Mishnah points to the chola, somebody who's actually sick. So, right, can't you make a distinction between someone who's actually sick and somebody who's just simply uncomfortable? So the Gemara says, chola in, mitzar lo. Isn't that a simple way to read the Mishnah? And the inference would therefore indicate that a mitzar is not putter from the sukkah? To which the Gemara's response is, amri chola hu misham shav peturim. Mitzar hu putter misham shav lo. No. The inference you make is the following. When it comes to the chola, so we have a patur not only for the chola, but even for his attendants as well. When it comes to mitzta'er, the patur is only for the mitzta'er, but if you have an attendant to the mitzta'er, so he's not going to be patur. Really good discussion to be had. It's not in the Gemara. So we say that this person who's sick is going to be exempt from the sukkah. We also say mitzta'er is patur from the sukkah. The difference being is that when you have a chola, so even the mishamish, even the attendant is going to be patur from the sukkah as well, but a mishamish only of the chola, not of the mitzar. If I'm uncomfortable in the sukkah, so now I can't say to my attendant, hey, we're leaving. In other words, only I'm allowed to leave, he's not allowed to leave. He has to stay. Why is a mishamish of a chola going to be exempt from the sukkah? So, right, in other words, he's not sick. So what is his allowance? The chola is sick, and so the chola now is given an exemption because, presumably, he'd be just too uncomfortable in the sukkah. But what about his attendant? So, ostensibly, the patur for the attendant is osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. In other words, once a chola has to leave the sukkah, and once he's attending to the chola, and taking care of a chola is a mitzvah, again, the Gemara doesn't say any of this. But presumably, this is the correct pshat. Now, again, Rashi doesn't even say this, right? This comes from later Rishonim, in terms of making this argument. But once the chola is sick, so therefore, now the attendant has to come along with the chola because taking care of the chola is a mitzvah. And once you're involved in a mitzvah, you're putter in a mitzvah. Now, what we're saying now makes a lot of sense because as far as the mitzvah is concerned, so a mitzvah, so he's just uncomfortable. He's not sick. He's just right now being in the sukkah. It smells bad. What are the examples that we just saw? It smells bad. There's a lot of bugs over there. Okay, so he's uncomfortable. But there's nothing wrong with him. He's just simply uncomfortable in the sukkah. So now you have a mishamish. So now, what's his, to, for him to take care of the mitzta'er? Mitzta'er is not sick. Okay, So he doesn't have the exemption, and you can't call him being an osik b'mitzvah. Ochlin achilas reichutz l'sukkah. Okay, more exemptions. Okay, I know this is, today's daf is a daf dedicated to exemptions from those who are chayv in the mitzvah of sukkah. We are now at the two dots. It's about two-thirds of the way down on Chavav Amid Aleph. You can eat achilas arai outside of the sukkah. V'kam achilas arai. A snack? What's snacking? Okay, I know this is an age-old question, and this question exists in perpetuity. What exactly is the definition of a snack? Amar Rav Yosef Tarti Tlas Beye. So Rav Yosef says eating the volume of 2 to 3 eggs. So Amalei Abayva Zimnitz again Sagile Leinish Bahachi. So Abay says to his Rebbe Rav Yosef, I don't understand. Right? People are eating that as their meal all the time. Bahavale Sudas Keva. I would call that a Sudas Keva, not a Sudas Arai. Elam Rabbi. So Abay says, I disagree. Kidetaim Bar Be Rav Va'ayel Likala. The yeshiva bacher. The young elite, who is now headed towards the base medrash. So, as Rashi describes over here, Shir can go on, all right? The Rebbe can go on for a while. And so, therefore, basically, I'm just saying this as an example, a granola bar. Okay, I'm not saying it as a halacha. I'm just thinking out loud in terms of a quick snack as you're running to the base medrash. Okay, that's right. Fine, a granola bar. So that would be considered an achilas arai that does not demand, that does not require sukkah. So the Amoraim are disagreeing in terms of what exactly is going to be the parameters of the definition of achilas arai. Tana Rabbanim will learn Tana Brisa Ochlin achilas arai chutz l'sukkah ve'en yishenim shenis arai chutz l'sukkah. So, although the Mishnah says that a snack does not have to be eaten in the sukkah because it is it's a quick snack, so therefore it does not demand that I eat in the sukkah. Now, certainly there's a hiddur, right? This is beyond the scope of today's daf, but it's a really important discussion in terms of halacha. There's certainly a hiddur to eat everything in the sukkah, even those things which are technically exempt from a sukkah, but certainly there's going to be a hiddur mitzvah. It is certainly a praiseworthy idea to go ahead and to eat, and to eat everything and anything in the sukkah. But in terms of the strict letter of the law, an exemption is given for achilas arai. If you are simply under the category of snacking, so then you're going to be exempt. The Gemara says, however, this is true for eating, but this is not true for the category of sleeping. When it comes to sleeping, we're not going to make separations between a shenas keva, shenas arai. The Gemara wants to know, why not? Why aren't we going to make a distinction? My time. So I'm Rav Ashik Zereshema Yerdeim. Because when it comes to sleeping, so you say, look, I'm just going to take a 15-minute nap. It's not going to be more than that. Everybody knows it's going to be more than that. Now, it happens to be, it's funny, by the way, because I could make the same argument by food. Again, obviously, I'm speaking on behalf of myself. Okay, fine. Okay, but anyway, so Amale Abai, Ella had the time we learned in the Brisa, Yasham Adam Shenas Arai Bitfilin, Aval Shenas Keva. So the Gemara says, okay, you're telling me that there's no distinction between a short nap and napping and sleeping. You're telling me there's no difference. The Gemara says, I know there's a difference because of the Brisa. The Brisa says that while wearing tefillin, so you are allowed to nap, but you're not allowed to sleep. So how can you tell me there's no difference? I'm telling you there's a difference. So lecha shema yeradim. And if your concern is that by sleeping, that a nap is going to turn into sleep, so why is it, if we're saying that by regarding sukkah, so why don't we say the same thing regarding tefillin? So I'm Rav Yosef, Reid Rav Eli, Bemosu Shneinas Alecherim. So the Gemara attempts to give an answer. Well, it happens to be that in the case of the tefillin, what you're doing is that you are you set up an alarm, a human alarm, right? You go over to your friend and you say, look, I'm going to be taking a nap right now. I'm wearing my tefillin, right? I don't want the nap to turn into sleep. So do me a favor, wake me up. Now, but just it's an important point to make. What's the problem with sleeping in tefillin? So Rashi over here says, and it's clear from other Gemaras as well, is that you will not have the proper nikias aguf. When you're wearing the tefillin have shema shem on them, and for you to have any kind of discharges, either a balkari discharge, or most probably over here, what we're concerned with is just simple flatulation. That also would be considered an affront to the tefillin. So that's a concern with sleeping and tefillin. The Gemara's assumption is that if you're just napping, that's not going to be a problem. meaning if you're just having a short nap, you're not going to flatulate. Okay, I know you could argue the point, but that's the Gemara's assumption. So now, given that assumption, so the Gemara says, okay, so what you do is you'll take a nap, and you'll ask somebody to wake you up in 15 minutes. So Maskev Lever Misharsha, Arvich Arvatsarich. What do you mean? You ask somebody to wake you up. Here's probably what's going to happen. You took a nap, he took a nap. And now both of you now are sleeping with your tefillin. So the Bryce is talking about where you took a nap in a really uncomfortable position, in a sitting position. So you went to take your nap, and you now know that the nap is not going to turn into sleep because you're in such an uncomfortable position. Okay. Rava Amar in Kevalashena. Rava gives an entirely different approach to resolve the whole issue. Again, when it comes to sukkah, so what are we saying? That by sukkah, you can't take a nap in a sukkah. But when it comes to tefillin, so you could take a nap. It bothered us. Meaning, what's the difference? And if the approach is that nap is going to turn into sleep, well, if that's true by sukkah, it's going to be true by tefillin as well. And there's no real way to safeguard of making sure your nap doesn't turn into sleep. So Rava says here, let's attack this from a totally different perspective. And that's as follows. When it comes to tefillin, as we already pointed out, the concern is that if for a short nap, you'll be fine and you'll be able to maintain a clean body while you're napping, and that's fine. When it comes to sukkah, the issue is a different issue. And that is the very definition of what Shana is by sukkah. In other words, what are the requirements? What's the obligation of a sukkah? To eat in the sukkah, to sleep in the sukkah. In other words, to do your basic functioning in the sukkah. Now, by eating, so the only thing that requires achila b'sukkah is achilas keva, only if it's a permanent meal. If it's achilas arai, so there's no obligation to eat in the sukkah, me'ikar hadin. But when it comes to sleeping, there is no segregation, there's no division in category between sleep and a nap. Meaning, yeah, in terms of semantics, we have different words that describe it. But ein shkeva l'shena. In other words, there's no such thing as kviya b'shena. Now, why not? So Rashi over here writes, I'm reading the Rashi. Rav amar l'shema yeradem l'chayshena, n'hilchech b'tfilin shari. V'sukah hainu time de iser shena sarai, l'fisha ein keva l'shena. Ein b'chilok b'ein keva l'arai. There's just simply no division. There's no categories. L'nyin sukah she'ein adam kova atzma l'shena. In other words, sometimes all you need is a power nap. And that's it, and that's going to be refreshing. Meaning by food, so we all know the difference between if we're just having a snack versus if we're having a meal. In other words, there's a clear distinction in terms of what the comfort that it provides for you, the benefit that it provides for you. But when it comes to sleeping, you can't say, oh, this is a schluff and that's a schluff. No. In other words, sometimes a person, all the person needs is a 10-minute nap, and that would be sufficient. Hilkach zui shena so. That's considered shena. And as Rashi then continues to point out, by tefillin, the issue is a totally different issue. The issue is just simply being able to maintain and preserve bodily cleanliness while wearing the tefillin. So then there is going to be a distinction between keva versus arai. Okay, that's Rava's understanding. Rava in this is more lumdish, if you will. Meaning that for the mitzvah of sukkah, there is no distinction in categories between Shana's Keva, Shana's Zarai. Tini Chada. Let's continue. We're on the very bottom of Chavav Amad Aleph. One Brisa says, Yashan Adam B'Tfilin, Shana's Zarai, Avalo Shana's Keva. One Brisa says that you can nap with your tefillin on. V'tanya Yidach Ben Keva Ben Arai. Another Brisa says that you can not only nap, you can even sleep with your tefillin on. V'tanya Yidach Lo Keva V'Lo Arai. And the third Brisa says nothing. You can't sleep and you can't even nap with your tefillin. So that's all confusing. The Gemara says, let's untangle. Okay, depends. If you're holding the tefillin in your hand, now I'm going to go with Rashi over here and explain the Gemara as Rashi explains it. If you're holding the tefillin in your hand, meaning you're not wearing this tefillin, you're just simply holding your hand. So under those circumstances, nothing. Not sleep, not a nap. Why? Because they're going to fall from your hand and they're going to fall to the ground. And hadaman chibereisha, if you're wearing the tefillin, so fine. So now you can take a nap. Because again, within a nap, you can maintain bodily cleanliness. But you can't sleep, because then you're going to lose control. And hadaparasudra ilave, let me do it better and correctly. Hadaman chibereisha. Man chibereisha, it's by your head. Meaning that the tefillin you're not wearing the tefillin, they are by your head. In other words, and you want to protect the tefillin. Well, yeah. So there you can nap and then you can sleep. At night you may pass gas, or while you're sleeping, I should say, you may pass gas. Okay. But in other words, as Rashi points out over here, but you want to guard and protect the tefillin, and the Torah was not given to Malachi Asharis, so then you have the, and because of your interest in guarding the tefillin, so therefore you're allowed to nap and sleep with the tefillin. And had the parisudra ilave, and finally the last one is when you're actually wearing the tefillin. So wearing the tefillin, so now you're allowed to nap, but you're not allowed to sleep. Okay. What do you mean? I went with Rashi. Right, Rashi says the manche bereisha arai motiv keva aser shem yafiach. Oh, you're right. I was right the first time. Right, you're very good. Phil, very good. Very good. I was right the first time. So, right, manche bereisha is you're wearing it and paris sudra ila alayu inicham eitzel merasho stuff. Okay, very good. Okay, good. Kama shenas arai. Shenas arai comes out to what? So, what is considered a nap again? By sukkah, Rava says there's no distinctions to be made. In other words, shena. But in terms of tefillin, so we know that there's a nap in the sleep. So what is the parameters of a nap? So tani rami bar cheskel kedei hiloch mea ama, the amount of time that it takes to walk 100 amas. Tani nami hachim, we learned in the Brisa as well. Ayeshem betefillin veroa keri, somebody who sleeps with his tefillin and he turns out to be a bal keri. So he needs to remove the tefillin while the keri is still on him. So oches berutsua. So according to Rabbi Yaakov, so what you'll do is you'll take it by the straps, but you will not take it by the actual bottom of the tefillin. According to the Chachamim, while you're wearing the tefillin, so you can only take a nap, but you can't sleep. And the amount of time that a nap constitutes, the amount of time that it takes to walk 100 amas. Amarav, also la adam leishen biyom yosta mishena sasos. Okay, taking a nap during the day, okay, or acceptable or unacceptable. There is a great discussion to be had regarding making a distinction between a weekday and Shabbos. Okay, on Shabbos there may be an argument to be made. There is an argument to be made regarding taking a long nap on Shabbos. But anyway, but this is during the week. So Rav says that a person may not sleep during the week more than shena sasos. More than the horse naps. The obvious question, what are we talking about? The kama shena sasus, how long a time are we talking about? So shisanishme is the amount of time that it takes to have 60 breaths. Okay, how often are you breathing? The assumption is that you're doing about 12 breaths a minute, approximately. Now we're talking about the duration of, 5 minutes. Okay, that's not a particularly long nap. I'm Rabbi Shante Damar. So Abai now tells stories about his Rebbeim. So he says, first he's going to be quoting his Rebbe. So the Rebbe of Abai, we go throughout Shas. The Rebbe of Abai is none other than Rabba. So Abai describing his Rebbe's sleep is Kid Rav. So my Rebbe Rabba would nap during the day, but no more than that which was done by his Rebbe, which was Rav. Ude Rav Kid Rebbe. Now, as far as Rav is concerned, his minug was based on his Rebbe, who we call also Rebbe. That's Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi. And with the Rebbe kid to David, now this is going to be a really big jump historically to go from Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi to David HaMelech. That's a jump of about 1,000 years. But again, it's a Masorah. It's a tradition that was given over. Ude David kid to Susya, Ude Susya shisa nishme. David HaMelech would not nap more than that of a horse, and the horse would a nap for no more than 60 breaths. Abai have a naim kedemayel me pumbadisa lebe kuve. Abai would take a nap, and his nap would go the amount of time that it would take to walk from pumbadisa to bekuve. Okay, I can't help you in terms of the exactly the geographic locations, but in terms of the distance. So Rashi writes over here that it is 60 parse, right? I'm sorry, 6 parse. Okay, but that's right, compared to what we've been describing now, that seems to be a lot longer in terms of a nap. So, Kariela Rav Yosef ad Masai atzel tishkav Masai takomish nasech. And Rav Yosef was critical. Rav Yosef says that's too long a nap. Meaning that, right, you're a Talmid Chacham, you need to be productive all the time, and for you to take a nap like that, that is lazy. Okay? Not calling him lazy, but you get the point though. However, that's not becoming of a Talmid Chacham. Tanu Rabbanan. If a person wants to sleep during the day, So he has the option to remove his tefillin. However, but and in the context of our Gemara, it means that he's going to nap, meaning not sleep. As we pointed out already on the Amud Aleph of today's daf, to sleep with your tefillin, so that becomes problematic. We're just talking about a nap over here. So again, you have the option of leaving your tefillin on or removing it. But Laila, cholitz v'neminiach divi Rabbi Nassan. But at night, so you must take off your tefillin. Because even if you're going to just argue that I'm going to take a nap, but because it's nighttime, the nap is probably going to turn into sleep. Rabbi Yossi Amer ha'yaladim la'olam cholitzim v'enam anichim v'mesha regilim b'tumah. Rabbi Yossi says that when it comes to yaladim, now normally a yalad is translated as a child over here, does not mean a child. The word yalad over here means a young man. A young man with his new wife. So then they should take off their tefillin any time on any occasion that they're going to go to bed. Now lemakas of Rabbi Yossi balkeri asol aniach tefillin. So perhaps Rabbi Yossi's position over here is predicated on the fact that a balkeri is prohibited from wearing tefillin. I'm Rabbi Biladim to show same imahem maskinan. Now I gave away the punchline, right? I didn't do a good job. Meaning at first the Gemara thought that he was going to bed by himself. And as a result of that, so it had something to do with him becoming a balkeri. And the relationship between a balkeri and tefillin. The Gemara says, no, it's a function of the fact that he's going to bed with his wife. And he's young, and they have a lot of energy. And Shema Yavoli, they hergal davar. And as a result of the fact that he's with his wife, and they're young, and they're going to bed, so it'll lead to hergal davar, and he'll have, given the attention of taking off his tefillin, and that is a bizayin to the tefillin, to have the tefillin being worn during Tashmish Amita. Tanu Rabbanim, we learned in a braisa, shachar v'shimash mitasa b'tefillin, eino oches v'al b'rsuf v'al b'kitzitza, ad sheyitol yadav yitle mimnei she'edayim askanei osein. If a person forgot, and he was mishamash mitasa, he had intimacy with his wife while wearing tefillin, so now, afterwards, so he should not take off the tefillin, not by the straps, not by the batim. What he should do is he should wash his hands first. His hands are dirty, and it would be a bizarre to the tefillin that he takes them off while his hands are in a state of lichluch while the hands are dirty. Okay, that kind of takes us to the end. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we will start with the Mishnah. Let's quickly review. Let's recap our daf today. A lot, meaning aside from the fact that just there was a lot in the daf today, but also just a lot of halacha and a lot of bases that were covered. But if we could just simply organize all of our information from today. First part of today, well, we just tied up the end of yesterday regarding having the Sheva Brachos in the Sukkah. But we start off today with a Braisa about Chasan, the Shushbinim, and the Bnei Chuppah, where they're going to be exempt from various mitzvahs, but it sounds like they're obligated in mitzvahs in general. Rashi over here makes a striking comment in the beginning of today's daf. The author of the Braisa does not hold a Vosik b'mitzvah, Patam in a mitzvah. Really striking comment by Rashi. Fine. But then the Braisas go on to describe that if you are traveling on Sukkahs for Rishus, so then while traveling, you're going to be Pater, but while you stop, you're going to be Chayev. However, if you are traveling with Dvar Mitzvah, you're going to be Pater both during the day and at night as well. Okay, under the category of Osek B'Mitzvah, Pater Min HaMitzvah. Why are you going to be Pater from Sukkah at night as well? Rashi says it's a function of Tirda. And I referenced a couple times this morning the Tosfos on yesterday's daf. Tosha says that somehow having to set up a sukkah at night is going to impinge, it's going to obstruct your ability to reach your destination by a certain point in time. In other words, it takes away from the mitzvah. If you are a guard and you're guarding, so while you're guarding, you're going to be exempt from having to sit in the sukkah, but that's only while you're guarding. If you're guarding a garden, so then your exemption is going to be both during the day, during the end, and night as well. Why should that be? The Gemara gave two explanations. Abai and Rava. Abai says, because of Teshu Kein Tadur, you cannot bring all your amenities out to the sukkah. And Rava says it's because once you're guarding, but you're in a sukkah, it's an invitation for all thieves to come and to steal. We talked this morning about the Cholin Umisham Sheyan, that if you're sick, you're going to be exempt, your attendants are going to be exempt as well. And the Gemara introduced us to the idea this morning of being a Mitzta'er. Even if you're not sick, but just the sukkah is uncomfortable for you, the bugs, the foul odor of the sukkah. So you're going to have a p'tur from being in the sukkah. But not the attendants. The attendants, no. And having a snack, you're allowed to snack outside the sukkah. What is the definition of a snack? The Amoraim debate what is the very definition. When it comes to sleeping, we're not going to make a distinction between a nap versus sleep. You cannot nap outside the sukkah. Now, why can't you nap outside the sukkah? So the Gemara tries to give a couple of pshatim, but Rava's pshat, which the Gemara seems to have landed on, is ein keva l'shena, because there simply is no nap when it comes to there's no distinction between napping and sleeping. Sometimes a nap is all you need, and so therefore, since the Torah requires you to sleep in the sukkah, napping is included in sleeping. The Gemara spent a lot of time, basically the remainder of today's daf, describing what about napping while wearing tefillin. So if you're going to nap while wearing a tefillin, so ostensibly that in of itself is okay. Preventing you from turning that into sleep, so that's a bit of a struggle. But and sleeping with tefillin is out of the question, because you're unable to preserve your bodily cleanliness while you're sleeping. Napping, the Gemara is assuming that you're going to be able to preserve your bodily cleanliness while napping. And then the Gemara went on to describe, what if you're going to bed at night, so you are then strongly encouraged, required to take off your tefillin. And what if you're going to bed with your wife? Again, same idea, strongly encouraged, required to remove your tefillin so that you're not mishamish mitasa while you're with your wife.